I hope you're enjoying this big exclusive via the Judge Joe Brown Show. Don't forget to subscribe to this channel. Now, back to the show.
You don't mind doing a quick intro that I can include in the audio. Again, this is going to be just a director's cut, a rough draft, a rough cut, if you will. So if you could just tell us a little bit about you and your resume, we can kick it off like that while we wait for Mr. Moore.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm Dr. Terrence Freeman, and I'm a retired professor of engineering, among other things. And even though I'm retired, I am still teaching part-time at St. Louis Community College in their engineering program and at the University of Missouri in their graduate program. And I have a bachelor's degree and a master's degree from Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute and MIT, and a PhD from the University of Missouri. I have been working with students in STEM for about 40 years now, and continue to look at it. And as part of my background, I've also worn a number of hats in diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I've worked with school systems with students K through 20, and am committed to trying to make a difference and encouraging the students that I work with to do the same.
Thank you. I appreciate you for sharing that with us. Let me see if this is who we are. Yeah, same area code 314. All right. Mm-hmm. So I assume this is Dr. Ramona?
Yes. Good evening.
Hi. How are you?
Hi. Fine, thank you.
Welcome, welcome. Okay, so we'll do the same as we heard from Dr. Freeman. He gave us a brief synopsis of his resume. If you don't mind following suit, that's how we would kick this off before I toss it to Mr. Moore. So, Ms. Ramona, I'm going to fall back and give you the floor.
Thank you. My name is Dr. Ramona Tumlin Rucker. I've been a part of the National Society of Black Engineers since 1982. What spurred me to continue with this organization for the rest of my life is its importance in the family unit to understand that STEM is critical. STEM is a part of the learning of the family and not just the child. And I've been committed to NSBE because this program has three options in it, and that's the pre-collegiate, the collegiate, and the professional. My background is petroleum engineering. I have a master's in project management, an MBA, and a doctorate in management. It is my hope to continue to use my life to encourage students to use STEM as a stepping stone to improving their life, improving their community, and touching those friends and family to be better, do better, and give more to the community.
Thank you. And so that leaves you, Mr. Moore. Please share with us your backstory, and then I want to play an audio clip, get your take on the audio clip, and then I'm going to toss it to you for you guys to do a quick roundtable.
Okay.
Well, my name is Ronald Moore, graduate of Sumner High School in St. Louis. I joined the Missouri National Guard at the age of 17 while in high school. I joined the ROTC program in college, was commissioned as a second lieutenant, as a combat engineer. Did work 20 years with the Missouri National Guard as a combat engineer. I went to school at SIU Edwardsville School of Engineering. Did civil and construction, also master's in project management. Once I retired out of the military, I joined the NSBE organization to have something to do and to give back, and it's been rewarding. I've been the pre-college director probably for close to 25 years, and at that time, we've had thousands of students that come into the program. Over 300 scholarships have been awarded by us to students going into the STEM fields. And it's been very rewarding, and I continue to be involved, and I am a life member and hope to continue to be involved at some level as long as I'm breathing.
Thank you. And I failed to ask, are you Dr. Moore?
No, I'm not. No, I just have a master's
degree. I want to make sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, he said that so lightly. I just have a master's degree. Okay. I just That is quite an accomplishment.
Well, I'm one of those people that I like to surround myself with people that are smarter than I am.
Yeah. That's a beautiful thing. All right. So
and there aren't very many.
There are.
That's the thing that he says. His weight is every bit as heavy as anyone with earning a PhD. So let's not ever pretend that that's otherwise. And all three of us are lifetime members of the National Society of Black Engineers.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. Very nice. I want to make sure that at the end I will give you guys a chance to share with us some information, give us some information regarding that. I know that I was privy to a link that I forwarded to Joshua Brown regarding your website and your current update. So we'll talk about that in the end. What I want to Mr. Moore, I'm going to follow your lead, but I want to kick it off like this, and there's going to be a quiz question at the end of this audio. So here we go.
Okay.
Let's talk about owning it.
Yeah.
We have invented the internet. We have created the most important technology companies.
Right.
Losing that rapidly to other countries, education, STEM, visas, all kinds of things, bringing the best talent here.
Right,
it's, right now, diversity is another issue, especially women.
Right.
How do you look at this? How do we change the equation here? Because many people feel that even though we've got this strong industry, we're losing on lots of ground.
First of all, we're not losing it rapidly. But what is true is that our lead will erode if we don't make some good choices now. STEM education, huge priority. Homegrown, we've got to have our kids in math and science, and it can't just be a handful of kids. It's got to be everybody. Everybody's got to learn how to code early.
Do you encourage your daughters to code?
You know, I have, and I've said
do they?
To, well, not as much as I would probably like, although I think they got started a little bit late. Part of what you want to do is introduce this with the ABCs and the colors, and particularly focusing on girls' participation, math, science, technology early is important. Underrepresented groups, African Americans, Latinos, we've got to get those kids tapped in. That's the largest growing part of our population. If they don't have basic digital
literacy.
What's
the problem? Because company after company, 70% white, 70% male, mostly white.
I think part of the problem is just generally our school systems aren't doing as good of a job on this, period, full stop. And then part of what's happening is that we are not helping schools and teachers teach it in an interesting way. And what ends up happening is a certain portion of the population just drifts away. Girls, for example, we don't lift up models of them being successful in STEM. We very rarely see portrayed on television female engineers.
Yeah. They don't have any jobs, actually.
Right, and so we just have to lift that stuff up. So that's the long term, getting that whole pool of talent focused. More immediately, we've got an urgent need right now. Comprehensive immigration reform would revise our system so that the best and the brightest from around the world come here. The ones who are studying here aren't forced to leave.
Mm-hmm.
We have been pushing this hard in Congress. So far, Congress has blocked it.
All right. So that ends the audio. 1, 2, 3, Dr. Ramona, Dr. Freeman, and Ms. Moore. Do you recognize that voice? Haven't heard it in a while.
Yeah.
I think I do. It sounds somewhat familiar.
Wish we heard more of it.
your team, Obama. President Obama.
Oh, yes.
All right.
He was on point.
Yeah, so that's my follow-up question. But what do you think about the audio, I want to lead into that. And then, Mr. Moore, if you could lead us into something that resembles a promotion where you guys do a roundtable, you know, for a few mm-hmm. minutes to kind of give us a snippet of what to expect tomorrow. But also, too, if you can afford us as many updates as possible so that we can do our homework until, you know, tomorrow's live show, that would also be great. But mm-hmm. go around the table. Ladies first, what did you think about the audio I just played?
The audio, again, is, was right on point. We need to start STEM education as early as possible, as early as teaching colors, to bring STEM into the life of a child, the life of the family. Again, I'm going to reiterate that I say STEM is a family fabric. We have to engage children as early as possible, in addition to engaging parents, that they are learning, listening with the child so that they are part of the push to keep everybody motivated in STEM. And again, the world is so that we have to fight for that position to be part of STEM and the growth of STEM to continue to be number one on this planet as far as technology is concerned, not only for ourselves and the country, but again, back to the children.
Okay, I want to ask you one or two questions before I toss it, you know, to the guys. How did you feel regarding his comment regarding the STEM gap, women and girls in science? I want to read something and then I'll have you respond, because I actually learned something today. I am on Harvard.edu, their website. Women in STEM need more than a law. Scientists have seen gains the past 50 years, but culture remains an obstacle. And just real quick, in the 1970s, Evelyn Hammonds walked the halls of MIT's physics department on her way to a PhD. Faculty, students, and staff kept asking her the same question, how's your work going? As an African-American woman, I carried the double burden. Chair and professor of the history of science recalled in a recent interview, the first 2 years I felt like I was constantly fighting to have people take me seriously. The entire article focuses on the gap, the STEM gap, a lack of females in the industry, and then also a lack of women of color in said industry. So what are your comments regarding why there are so few women and even fewer women of color?
I would agree with the statistics. The statistics are real. There is a huge gap, but I can testify to the gap that I am an African-American woman, and I've walked into the classroom where I've been the only woman of color, the only female in the room. We have to do everything we can to engage our children, engage our girls, that they are worthy of math, they are worthy of these technical and hard subjects, and that they can be successful. I've had some experience in going into high schools and speaking to groups of students, and having some of the females in there saying, well, that might be too hard, or I'm not really good at math. It's not that you're not good at math. You haven't been encouraged. You haven't had the right teachers, perhaps. You haven't had the right environment. We have to look at girls, women. We have to look at women of color, people of color. And then we have to also look at children in economically depressed areas. The children who are in economically depressed areas are also part of that gap. I don't know that that's been measured against women and against people of color, but when you look at economically depressed areas, they too fit into that mold that we have to bring more, we have to do more, we have to encourage more. Whenever I get the opportunity, I just try to stand as an example that if I can, coming from an economically depressed area, being an African-American woman, and certainly being a woman of color, and that, yes, it's a hard fight, but it is possible.
Thank you so much for that. I am now about to toss it to Dr. Freeman and Mr. Moore. Per my notes, there are four main reasons why there is a lack of women in STEM. Again, harvard.edu. This is from whence I kind of arrived at this. Let's see here. I'm scrolling. Number one, the environment shapes girls' interest and motivation in STEM. Number two, social bias affect women's progress and career choices. Number three, colleges, universities, and workplaces aren't making enough necessary changes to accommodate female students. And four, lack of role models. Kind of piggybacking on what Dr. Rucker said, but to you, I want to ask you guys, there really isn't a reason why, because it's not about confidence that's holding, you know, women back, but there is a difficulty attracting women to STEM courses. So what say you, Dr. Freeman, first, because Mr. Moore, I'm going to toss it to you to host the rest of the conversation, but why do you think it's there's a gap, a STEM gap?
There are a multiplicity of problems. Yeah, I did well in high school. Yeah, I was an A student, and I was fifth in my graduating class. The four who were ahead of me were women. And it certainly isn't a question of confidence, but it is a question of exposure. And one of the things that we've covered already is it's so important to expose and introduce and showcase so that our young girls and boys, for that matter, especially among underrepresented populations, see the possibilities at an early age. It's important for them to get involved in coding, but it's also important to see the creative opportunities that rest in STEM. And it's also important, as our president said, that whether or not you're getting that career, everyone needs to be engaged and involved in STEM and beyond coding. I think coding is important, but there are so many decisions that we make day to day that are critical that we need a foundational understanding of the importance of STEM in our day-to-day life. But going back to what's happening, particularly with our young girls, we don't have enough professors that get to showcase their skill in front of young girls. We don't have enough expertise in the elementary school level where the girls may have an opportunity to participate in science fairs and other activities. You know, we don't have the encouragement that we need to have in order to get them to persist in those opportunities. And one of the things that is important is that we don't have enough programs like the National Science Society of Black Engineers where we work with students and we work with them at an early age. And just as a comment, in Ferguson, Missouri, you had headlines in 2014, because of the travesty that occurred with Mike Brown. Of course, what was not reported in Ferguson in 2014 is that our young students in the National Society of Black Engineers, including young girls, won first place in the windmill turbine design at a national convention. And those students, and we work with students, and we're located in working with our pre-college initiative in Ferguson. So we have a track record of what happens when we expose students at an early age, give them role models, and continue to work with them. They excel, not just working in STEM, but excelling in STEM. We have students who have African-American female who came to us and is now in her second year in teaching at Cornell University in artificial intelligence and robotics. We have NASA scientists through us. We have so many opportunities. We know what works. It's a question of whether or not
as a community, within our government, if we are going to do those things that we know work in giving our young students, first of all, exposure, secondly, access, third, we want to give them inclusion so that they're not just there, but they're included. We want to emphasize equity, so when they have a seat at the table, it's a powerful and a representative seat. And then we want to provide them with the navigational skills to succeed, because STEM can be challenging. And what happens all too frequently, especially with some of our underrepresented students and sometimes our girls, is that when they get to the challenge, they may not work through it because it seems easier to switch majors. And when there are role models and when we work with them and they work through it, they succeed. And that's just one of the things that we see experientially.
Thank you. Mr. Moore, would you like to address the question before I
pass
it to you?
I would say in that statistics, it's a little bit off in the black community, because actually there are probably more black females right now in engineering programs than black males. And we worked with a lot of programs this past summer where there might have been 24 African-American females in a STEM program and not one African-American male. So we have a double problem that we have to deal with. We have to motivate African-American males to step up and take on the challenge to be more academically prepared and aggressive in this society, because, as we know, there could be problems if the African-American female is highly educated and highly compensated in the workforce or as an entrepreneur, and African-American male is not. I was looking at a report today on CNN and Fox and various news outlets. It says 55 schools in Chicago report no proficiency in math or reading. That is the true pipeline to prison. If you look at the National Sheriff Association put out a report about 10 years ago, it says 67% of prisoners that are in jail for murder didn't graduate from high school, nor did the victim. So we have to do a better job of preparing our students. And we are about preparing students. Some people are about saving students. So I believe in teaching kids how to swim versus other people believe in it when they drown and jump in and save them. So we come in from different perspectives, and you need both. But we have a significant problem with early childhood development, things that even 100 years ago the kids were dying to learn how to read and write. A lot of kids now take it for granted, and unfortunately reality hits them in the face when they become 18 years of age and get out here in the real workforce, and they see these young people with all of this material goods that they work for, and they like, I want that too. Now they can't figure out how to get it. And I believe we're coming to a great continental divide in wealth, even in the black community, because the second largest group of millionaires in this country are black folks. And I'm not talking about entertainers. I'm talking about average, everyday lawyers, doctors, dentists, entrepreneurs. But also the biggest group in poverty is the black community. So that's a significant divide. And even in our programs, as much as we try to reach back as far as possible, the vast majority of the people that take advantage of our programs are students that have parents that are professionals, highly educated, and have the means. And so we struggle to get young people from the poorest community into our program. Now, that's not to say that we don't have some, but we should have a significant a larger amount. And black engineers make up 4% of the engineering population. We really should be making up 12%. So we would almost have to triple our number just to be on parity with the rest of the community.
And that 4% number is much smaller when you consider how many are in education,
mm-hmm.
especially in engineering and working with those students.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a challenge, and it's important also for those who have to make a commitment to give back
Thank you.
Help us with the list.
You can finish your thought.
Oh, no, no, that's fine. Go ahead.
All right. To complete the hour, I am going to toss it to you, but I wanted to share what sparked this conversation, my need to have the conversation. It was this audio clip. It's only about a minute, but I think it's relevant to this hour.
I believe that STEM is important because it's the basis of our world. It's the basis of communication. Think about it, right? You could get on a computer right now today to grocery shop, right? You can get on an iPhone and take you from point A to all the way across the country. You can actually now, with certain devices and technology, monitor your heart, monitor your faculties to make sure that you're healthy. So I believe that STEM is so important because it's the foundation of our livelihood, whether it comes from the clothes we wear, the food we eat, the cars we drive. I mean, think about it, right? Today, we can actually sit in a vehicle and connect an internet and have a whole mobile office inside of a car. When we think about sports, right? The top athletes in the sports arena, they take time using technology to, number one, advance themselves as a professional athlete, and they use technology and STEM-based things to make themselves better. So I completely feel like STEM is important for every area of life.
All right, so I thought about it that way, and then I didn't think about it that way. But I do agree with him that it is the foundation, and thus we need to have more conversation regarding it, because I think people have a tendency to think more of, oh, it's just science, it's just math, it's just this, it's just, they forget the technology. And a lot of people probably think the E stands for entertainment, you know, at this point, being that it bleeds into so many aspects of that world, as he so eloquently put it. So I would love for you guys to respond to that, but I want to also place the rest of the show and the rest of the hour into your hands, Mr. Moore, but if you guys could comment on that audio, or if you feel we've already touched on that, that's fine too. But I did want to
say
that.
Well, I would let my two esteemed guests go ahead first. Yes. Dr. Ramona and Dr. Freeman, you guys can go ahead and comment on that.
I would agree that we are in a technology age that is unstoppable. We're on a train to science, technology, engineering, where it is part of our everyday life and structure. COVID has taught us that we are working remote. We are working in silos. We are working in teams via technology. The computer and internet and all of the things that connect us, the phone, everything will be based on our expertise and our knowledge of technology. It's something that's undeniable. And I think that we have to, again, prepare our girls in particular. We have to look at people in economically depressed areas who have very poor access to internet, very poor access to computers or any kind of technology for that matter, except possibly when the children go to school and get some short access to those things, but nothing like what they're going to need. They're going to have to be prepared. Our children, our people of color, we are going to have to do that extra thing to make sure that we are ready for this technology evolution that's already before us.
Yeah, agreed. And yeah, in listening to that clip, yeah, sometimes it's easy to focus on the STEM that is more in our face, more obvious, but it's critical that we have a larger understanding of STEM at the individual level and at the societal level. You know, so in addition to the computers and GPS and some of the things that we're seeing and our ability to communicate, we make political and social decisions on a day-to-day basis that really do require a deeper understanding of science and technology than we have as a population. We're living in a world where the flow of information, jobs, technology, capital, people no longer respects geographic boundaries. We're in a global competition and moving forward. Yeah, but at the same time, all of us drive over bridges, and some of those bridges are failing. You know, so we have infrastructure challenges, and we just voted on an infrastructure bill, and that is steeped in science and technology in terms of how we build the future. We just came out of an argument about to be vaccinated or not vaccinated, and what's the nature of an mRNA vaccine, and how do we understand that? And again, science and technology colliding with politics. You know, we have the communication challenges. I had major surgery a few years ago, and the surgeon used what's called a Da Vinci robot to assist the surgery. And so it was a very complicated 7.5-hour ordeal that he could continue and the surgical team could continue because of the robotic technology in performing that surgery. You know, so we have climate change and climate challenges. And when we look at STEM and all of the challenges that we have, one of the things that is an infinitely renewable resource is our technology and our creativity as we come together and make decisions on how we're going to live in this brave new world and how we're going to exercise that technology using ethical standards. Because we can make it and because we can use it doesn't mean that we always should. How and when, all of those are decisions that are going to end up in a political arena. And if we have a population that is technologically or scientifically or mathematically illiterate, then our ability to be manipulated by con men or the greedy or those who are self-serving, it grows exponentially. In this technological world, we have to be technologically aware in order to make the types of decisions that are going to serve our communities and especially those populations that are underserved. Because when things happen in a negative way, the first communities to feel the impact are going to be those communities that are marginalized.
All right. Well, with that being said, one of the things I would like to point out, there are a significant amount of young people in our community that are doing well in STEM. I'm talking about rating at the top of their classes at MIT and some of the military academies. And I'm amazed when I see all these young African-Americans that are 14, 15 years of age entering engineering programs at colleges and graduating in 2 to 3 years. But we still have a significant amount of problems with the ones at the very bottom of the totem pole, and we must put more resources and ideas into educating and exposing those young people as early as possible. It's all about early childhood education and development. My oldest grandson, who will be 4 this weekend, he already understands the planet system and the subplanets, and that was not by accident. He was exposed, and his little brother will be exposed because he was exposed. And we have to somehow change the focus of our culture to be more about the future of our children and our grandchildren. I'll give you an example. I work with a lot of artificial intelligence with a group out of Ukraine. 1/3 of all college students in Ukraine are majoring in AI, computer science, and cybersecurity. That was one of the main reasons why they're doing so well against the Russians, who are 3 or 4 times their size. It's their education level and their ability to talk to one another on the same level. And for us to have a vibrant community, and to have the security and safety in order to bring the educational and the skill levels up significantly. And we focus in right now on engineering, but the trades are important too. HVAC, it involves engineering and technology these days. Just basic civil construction, carpentry, plumbing. Those are all trades that we're still lacking in that pay good wages, but you don't need to have a 2 or 4-year degree. And so we're even lacking in those areas. And so we are pretty much more of a holistic, you know, we just want kids to be successful. If they do STEM, fine. We've had students switch off and go into the medical fields, dental fields, finance. Okay, we're not trying to make every kid an engineer, but we want to give them a good foundation so they can go into whatever craft or trade they choose to and be successful. We even had some switched off and went into the music fields. Wonderful. But the thing is, they as an adult, they need to be able to sustain themselves. And pretty much parents don't feel like parents if they're not able to provide for their children, regardless of what racial background you come from. And so that's important to have that good financial stability that a person can feel like a whole person in front of their family that they can provide for them and guide them. And so coming out of Black History Month, I mean, I'm amazed at all of the Black History individuals that have made significant contributions back over 100 years ago, like Alice Ball discovered the cure for leprosy back in like the 1890s. And Mary S. Peake started Hampton University coming out of slavery. And Patricia Babb was a world-renowned ophthalmologist that discovered a large segment of the cures for glaucoma. And Percy Julian, who synthesized lots of chemicals to make medical drugs that we see used even today. And Frederick Drones was an inventor and entrepreneur that developed a lot of refrigeration units that you see even today. When you see a truck that says Thermo King on the highway, that's Frederick Drones. And the same thing with Garrett Morgan, inventor of the gas mask and the traffic light. So we have a significant history of entrepreneurship, innovation in our community, even during slavery and post-slavery. But we have to go back and indoctrinate our young people as to their history and that they need to play a significant part in the future. And the entrepreneurship, a lot of our significant entrepreneurs beyond entertainers have STEM backgrounds. And so some of the people like Reginald Lewis and David Stewart, who are billionaires, and Michael Chen, who's a Nesby guy in Canada, is a billionaire. Bob Johnson from BET, who's not an engineer, but, you know, it's a technology media company. Magic Johnson, Robert Smith, who is a chemical engineer, is a billionaire. So Wes Moore, the new governor of Maryland. And so my thing is, STEM has always played a significant part in our culture. We just have to remind and reeducate some of our people the important parts that it has played, is playing, and will play in the future. So I would like for my esteemed colleagues, if they want to comment on that.
Absolutely. And one of the things that's important with, you know, what Ron was just sharing is that we do have that rich history of excelling and succeeding despite the odds. And although we are in difficult times right now, that doesn't mean that we can't excel and succeed. And we want to prepare, as Ron mentioned, our students for the total process of living as well-adjusted, intellectually competent, and self-determining individuals. And that STEM background, that STEM opportunity, certainly puts students in that pathway and in position to make good choices and to be essentially the captains of their fate. The challenge that we have is that the students that we lose to STEM initiatives or continuing in STEM, we lose most of them in elementary school. Yet by the time we get to eighth grade, that we only have maybe 20% of our student population and underrepresented groups that are still interested in continuing in STEM. When we can show them what the opportunities are and that they are more than capable by putting in the work and the effort of excelling in that field, then our students do exceptionally well. Yeah, we don't have any problem with that. But that challenge is getting them, first of all, to see that opportunity, and then secondly, to follow through. You know, one of the things that I mentioned earlier is that those who have made it through, and this is one of the things that we do with NSBE, I think have a responsibility to reach back and at least be visible and supportive of those who are coming behind. We spend a lot of time talking about Gen Z, and rightfully we should. But what is rarely mentioned is that Gen Alpha is already here. They're about 12 years old right now. They'll be hitting college campuses soon, but through dual enrollment or taking some advanced classes while they're in high school. We're continually churning, and there's a continual need to let students not just be users of technology, but creators of technology, and not just living in that technological world, but helping to make the decisions that are relevant to living in that technological world. One of the things that I often challenge my students is to not chase the gold, but to be the gold. And that's one of the things that we try to do in NESI.
Ramona?
I wholeheartedly agree with Dr. Freeman and Mr. Moore. And I say again, STEM has to be part of the fabric of the family. It has to be early in education, early in the home. STEM is something that we need to make part of our everyday life. We need to unmask what the fear is in math, what the fear is in technology. There is no fear. We need to introduce it early. We need to set up confidence levels in their abilities to master the topics of science, technology, engineering, and math, and not let it be for only the kids who have a certain grade level. Or STEM is for everyone at every level all the time.
And I would like to follow up with that. And back probably after slavery, African Americans were trained to be sharecroppers. And so they felt that they only needed to read to maybe the third, maybe if you're lucky, to the sixth grade level. So I believe, like the new Jim Crow, is that there is, I guess I would say, the system is not proactive in developing our African-American talent, because they feel, the system feels that they only need them to be what I call a sharecropper education, which nowadays maybe ninth grade, maybe even a high school diploma from a poor institution. So they're not looking to educate our people. So we have to do it ourselves, and we have to guide our people into the right direction, because the general society feels, oh, we don't need them to be engineers, doctors, and lawyers, because, number one, there'll be competition to us, and number two, the more people we have in that category, the lower the wages we can pay them. So but that's just my take on why society in general is not that active in promoting STEM in the African-American community, but also why we need to be more active in promoting it in our community. And I guess if anybody else has any comments or questions, please feel free.
You know, for those who are listening, and this is perhaps just a shout-out, if you are interested in pursuing STEM, there are so many pathways now in getting there. You know, we've already mentioned that STEM, it's a technological level, that it's not just about being an engineer. You might be a mathematician. You might be in that area where you're doing HVAC or automotive technologies. You know, we need all of those things. But just talking a little bit about engineering, applied mathematics, and science right now, that students who pursue that, you can start at a community college and transfer to a four-year school or to a university. But if you get through that with a 3.0, we'll find a way to get your master's degree and your PhD paid for. Yeah, so it's important as you go through that there are options where you don't have to go deep in debt in order to get your STEM degree, number one. But number two, with that STEM degree, you are better positioned to pay off college loans than virtually any other pursuit.
So if you don't mind spending the last 10 minutes talking about your program and directing people to the website and any other okay. affiliate links and social media links, that would be great.
Mm-hmm. Well, the main website for the National Society of Black Engineers is nsbe.org, and our national headquarters is in Alexandria, Virginia. Currently, I think NSBE has about 30,000 members worldwide. We have 2,000 elected leadership positions. We host 18 regional conventions. We have an annual convention. One will be coming up in about 3 weeks in Kansas City, where there are expected to be 16,000 participants, and 400 major corporations will be there. So all the big boys will be there, the Boeings, the Northrop Grumman's, the Mercedes-Benz, Rolls-Royce, Ford Motor, General Motors, Tesla, all of them will be there looking for black talent to hire. Most recently, we were there in Kansas City 7 years ago. I believe it was Northrop Grumman had over 300 engineering positions for the first time that they did not fill at the convention. So that if we had had 300 African-Americans there that would qualify for those jobs, they would have had job offers. So we have to prepare more of our young people to be able to go and take advantage of these opportunities as they avail themselves. NSBE has over 310 collegiate chapters, 99 pre-college chapters, which St. Louis has one of the larger ones in the country, and we have 88 professional chapters throughout the country with 6,000 technical professional members. And our professional staff, again, is headquartered in Alexandria, Virginia. And here locally, we started our program probably back about 1997 with 19 students from Metro High School, and there were three young ladies that came to us and said they had been in some other summer programs and they had NSBE chapters and they wanted to start one. And we started one here, and all three of those young ladies graduated with engineering degrees. One of them works for Amran UE, another one works for Nestle Purina, and the other one works for Department of the Navy. So the three young girls, all of them about 5 foot tall, were the initiates of the program here in St. Louis. And since that time, like I said, we've given over 300 STEM scholarships to students that have gotten degrees in STEM, 10 of which are in PhD programs or have received PhDs. And Ramona's three sons all went through the program, all got STEM degrees, and her youngest son is getting his PhD right now from Washington University right here in St. Louis in mechanical engineering. So we meet at the St. Louis Community College at Florissant Valley, which is located in Ferguson, Missouri, in the engineering building the third Saturday of each month. And our website is nsbe-stl.org, and we will be meeting there the third Saturday this month. And if Dr. Freeman or Ramona want to add something to that, please feel free to go ahead and do so.
Well, Ron, I think you summed it up very nicely. For those listening and for anyone, if you can't get to your school counselor, get to your public library. Get to the front desk and tell the librarian, I'm interested in STEM. Can you connect me or show me how to get connected to any local organizations or anything on the internet or in the library that can help me be STEM literate? And that library person will help you tremendously. I am a big proponent of the public library.
It is. Those are opportunities, and for parents who may be listening, and both Ramona and Ron have mentioned this, we've reinforced the idea that you need to start early. One of the things that I look at and encourage is that when that time comes around for birthday gifts or Christmas gifts or whatever the celebration may be, think about giving STEM. Think about a chemistry set or kit. Think about one of the Lego Mindstorm kits. Think about an Erector set. Think about something that is hands-on where students or children are playing and interacting. Make sure that you take them to the science museum, the history museum also, the art museum also, but get them involved in activity. You can go out on Amazon, for those who shop on Amazon, and the next day, you can have wonderful science kits and imaginative and creative opportunities delivered to your doorstep. Please take every opportunity to expose, and if you're working with your children, expose their childhood friends also. If you have that opportunity, if you take your child to the science museum, take some of his friends to the science museum also, so they have something that shapes their conversation when you're not around. The things that we do to encourage them in not only embracing it, playing with it, and talking about it puts them in a place where they are more likely to involve STEM as part of their future.
And I would like to say STEM is like a family event with NSBE. So we have an annual holiday party. We have a picnic. And we invite the grandparents, the parents, the students, along with their brothers, sisters, cousins. We travel every year to the convention. One year we went to Boston. I think it was 99 of us on one plane. And we got off the plane. The convention center was only a couple blocks away. So we all walked from the airport to the convention center. And we had the best of time. One of our members was the four-star general at Scott Air Force Base. He was an engineer and a pilot. He flew in and spent time with the kids. Jack Dorsey from Twitter was there. You do not get to meet those type of people just in the average walk of life. So when you belong to an organization that's a family environment, you get that extra push, that extra nod that you're important, and that extra exposure. It's all about the team. When you're part of NSBE, you're part of a team. So the young people can call Dr. Freeman when they have a problem on a job that they can't figure out, or if they have a social problem, they can call Ramona or myself and say, I'm having this issue with my supervisor, what should I do? I'm having a technical problem calculating the resistance on a wire that's 3 miles long. And if I don't know the answer, I know somebody that does. So you get that lifelong environment, and everybody are like family, cousins, you know, they're extended cousins and brothers and sisters when you become part of the organization and stay connected. And that's very important for the long-term survival. And I always tell people, whether your kid is going into the medical fields or whatever, or the law, the legal fields, or STEM, find two or three other students that are going in that same path and have them study together, try to go to the same school together, try to go to the same conventions together. It will make their journey a lot less cumbersome.
We've been at this so long that we can now take some of our students who are in high school and put them in touch with college students around the country. We can take college students who are involved and put them in touch with professional engineers locally and around the country. In a typical meeting that we have at the college campus at St. Louis Community College, we may have four-year-olds who are running around because they're the younger siblings of children who are involved in the program. So they're already getting interested and waiting for their chance to be involved. And there are very few programs that can set that environment where we have parents, community members, professional engineers, collegiate students pursuing engineering and STEM, high school students, middle school students, elementary school students, and sometimes toddlers in the same environment where STEM is the glue holding us all together.
Before we get off, because I'm going to, next week we're going to sort of kind of have a part two to expand the conversation. Next week's guest is, let me see, I got to refer to my notes. Sorry about this. What is her name? I know she's affiliated with, I don't know her name, but she's the chair lady for the Tuskegee Airmen's Association.
Okay, yeah. We're familiar with that organization.
Yeah. Well, definitely would love for you guys to hang out with us again next week if your schedule permits. I wanted to ask her about this. But before we get off, I want to ask you a question, and I want your first reaction, your first response. How do we attract people, or how do I word this without offending anyone? Because I'm always cognizant of that. There's no other way to put it except, how do we get people off of TikTok and toxic masculinity / femininity and focused on this and the importance of, because it doesn't seem like an easy task when you have adults and our elders partaking in the same insanity and making this a priority. So social media and all of its accoutrements, you know, are the focus, and that's what is being pushed on the children, and to the point that most of the young people we interview, they no longer want to be doctors, lawyers, astronauts, football players, and rappers. They want to be social media influencers. So we will end on that. What do you think we need to do to kind of pull the attention from that to this?
Easy in the flash is always there. We've been fighting forever the idea that I want to be an NBA, I want to be a ball player, even though there's limited opportunity in excelling to the point of being in a professional league. And so the next thing, especially when there is, when it's seductive and when it is pushed pervasively as it is, one of the things that you do, and it goes back to that exposure, you give children, expose them, and give them alternative things to do. When they're with us in the program, they're not on TikTok. They're not on social media, because we're doing hands-on, engaging activities to capture their attention. Now, we're not going to eradicate it, but it's also important when we talk about social media to understand the strength that it has to offer and the dangers that it can represent. And one of the things that should happen in schools and that we have to be better aware of is how to really have a conversation about how one navigates social media, the perils, the pitfalls, and the promise that it has. Because if we don't teach that, if we don't teach how to navigate social media, then those who are flim-flam artists, those who are con artists, those who are out to manipulate, those who are going to monetize their role as influencer by getting likes and clicks, they will dominate. It takes parents and it takes community members to provide alternatives on one hand and education on how to navigate that on the other.
Ramona, you want to comment?
Yes, absolutely agreeing with Dr. Freeman. And we have to meet them where they are. To change the trajectory, we have to intercept. We have to show young people there's something else to do. You can't just criticize them. You can't change their mind, but you can change their thought process and open up a new avenue. Again, change the trajectory. TikTok, all those things that have, I guess, mesmerized our young people, we have to get in there. Maybe we need a STEM TikTok. Maybe we need some more exposure at the science fairs. Maybe we need more television coverage of what people are doing in the communities as far as STEM is concerned. We can't fight what the young people are doing and the social media that they are attached to. We have to get in there where they are. We have to meet them where they are.
And I would
you
like
say,
to
you
say,
say young people, but there are a lot of old. Most of the people I see on TikTok are 40 and up. You know, like the whole family has a. They're participating
just,
and.
It's
so,
not just TikTok.
Yeah, thank you.
At almost every age level now, we spend an inordinate amount of time checking our phones. It's almost hard to believe that people 30 or 40 years ago actually got up and went to work and didn't talk to anyone outside of work on their phone until they came home that evening. How did that even possibly? And so we can look at TikTok, but Facebook and other social media outlets are all seductive in occupying an inordinate amount of our time. You can sit in church and watch people who are checking their phones.
Yeah.
Well, one thing I would say, the difference between being highly successful these days in this society is your ability to reduce the desire for short-term gratification. And those things are like short-term gratification, but like a lot of times I'll ask students, I'll say, okay, you've been playing on your phone for 2 hours. How much money did you make? Well, I didn't make any. I said, well, you know, if you had been doing something productive, you could have made some income. And so we have to put it into
perspective. Wait, Dr. Freeman. Mm-hmm. No. Influencers are making a lot of money now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
I don't know. I wouldn't say. You're picking like the one half of one. You're picking the one half of 1%. But you must remember in this country, if you look, there are probably over a million millionaires in this country. The vast majority of them make their money in STEM. Because remember, there are probably maybe 4,000 professional athletes, but there's over a million people in this country that have access over $10 million, and almost none of them make their money in TikTok or in sports. I'll give you an example. I remember one time they featured Magic Johnson's house, and it was in a subdivision that had 1,600 homes in it, gated community on four different entrances. He was the only body that lived there was an athlete. Everybody else made their millions and billions doing other stuff. And if you came to St. Louis, you know, Nelly the rapper is from St. Louis, but he's probably the only one that made any significant amount of money. I guarantee you there are thousands of people in St. Louis that have way more money. I'm talking about billionaires. We probably have 6 or 7 billionaires in St. Louis, and they didn't make their money rapping or dribbling basketballs. So we have to make sure that they understand the vast majority of people that make their money are making it as being real estate, entrepreneurs, inventors, doctors, lawyers. They don't make it being on TikTok and all other stuff.
Another thing to look at, because you are right, there are people that are making significant dollars as influencers. There are people making significant dollars as in the NBA, in Major League Baseball, in football, in entertainment. But when you look at the investment and the work that people have to do to rise to that level of having a sustainable income over a period of years, that pool gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And too often our children think they're going to succeed in this entertainment or sport or now influencer arena without doing the work that has to be done. So they see the flash and the outcome. They don't see the work behind it in order to get there. And when you look at technology is frequently transient. So there may be things that are flashy right now where you're making money, but when the technology changes, where does that put one 10 years from now or even 5 years from now with how fast technology changes? So it's one thing for someone to be an influencer. It's another thing, because we've had workshops. I've been part of groups where we've invited, air quote, influencers in to talk about what they had to do and what they continue to do, the amount of work they put in order to get there and sustain it. And a lot of the children that are attracted to this idea overwhelmingly are not going to succeed in that endeavor. A few will break through, and they get a lot of airtime, but most will not. And in STEM, they could be making $100,000 a year sustainable rather than chasing the illusion of making massive wealth and never getting there.
Well, you just look at even the professional athletes. It's one of my big pet peeves is that we'll have a STEM festival and maybe 100 kids might show up, But on that same Sunday, you drive by all of the football fields in St. Louis, and they're packed. Stands are packed, and everybody thinks that their son is going to be the next NFL player. And we might have maybe five NFL players from St. Louis right now playing in the NFL. But there's probably 80,000 engineers in St. Louis making six figures and millions. So the probability of being successful is a lot higher than being one of those five versus being 80,000 engineers and STEM people. It might even be close to 200,000 if you add in how Boeing alone probably has about 20,000 engineers in St. Louis, and you got the power company, you got the gas company. So you're comparing that against all those good, stable engineering jobs. And how many times have we looked at a program where they show the has-been rapper that's broke now? I can't think of the name of the story that talks about, you know, where they used to, where they've fallen from grace, whether it be an athlete or a entertainer. And I'm amazed at how entertainers can make some of the type of money that they did, and then they end up broke. But I guarantee you, if you're an engineer, especially there's a husband and wife team and they both are engineers, by the time they retire, they will have $4 or $5 million between a home, their retirement account, 401k, and other investments. Where I've seen, you know, I'm a big fan of Googling the wealth, and I'll see some of these rappers who are very well known, and they'll be like, oh, their worth is $800,000 or $500,000, and you're like, well, that's nothing. Now, of course, the one at the top 5-10% look very attractive, but that's only a handful of people. And so we have to look at what can sustain the average individual. You can be an average engineer and make $100,000. You have to be a superstar to make the millions that some of the top athletes like Jay-Z and Rihanna and those folks do. And most of them make their money off. They became very wise business people, and they made their money off of other things. They didn't really make their money in the music industry. They made it off of selling liquor or promoting other people, clothing lines, and things like that. So if you don't do those things, you know, you only got a window like the athletes, maybe 5-6 years to be famous and good. And if you don't handle your money right, you could end up broke and suicidal. And we've seen a lot of them commit suicide recently, and because they lost all their money. So I'm not saying that somebody who has a so. Mm-hmm.
No, finish. Finish.
And I'm not saying anybody's got talents to not to pursue them. But if you're not in that top 1%, just like young people used to come to me and said, Mr. Moore, he says, should I go to college? You know, they playing basketball. I said, college is not for everybody. I said, now, if you can jump over Michael Jordan's head and dunk a basketball, you might can make it in the NBA. But if you're not close to those skills, college or a highly skilled job or being an entrepreneur might be your best option.
Gifts that we can give our children is information and the ability to make formed, well thought out decisions. You know,
okay,
so
Dr. Freeman, what I want you to do, because you guys helped me figure out what's a proper segue from this promo to tomorrow's live show. And that's the ESPN 30 for 30. And that's per Google Wikipedia, a dark story of the dark side of success. Broke is an allegory for the financial woes haunting economies and individuals all over the world. So that will be perfect way to introduce the argument and the not so much the relevance. Everybody knows it's relevant. We all know, STEM is relevant. I also had someone text me, shout out to Wes. He said there's such a thing as STEAM, STEAM, and that is science, right? Technology, engineering, art, and math. So we'll also have that conversation tomorrow. But, yeah, I definitely want to put a pin in that because it was starting to get good, and I didn't want it to turn into the show. But that would be awesome for tomorrow in addition to the things that we kind of teetered around today, because as I mentioned, this is a very, very important conversation to have, and hopefully this is a part one of two if you guys are available next Friday to join us when we have the chief over there at the Tuskegee Airmen Association. She'll be on next week. So this was good. This was good. Dr. Rucker, if you've got any, you got social media or website, I'll start with you. Anything that you'd like to mention, ways people can reach you and or book you possibly for an upcoming podcast? Because we don't want to, I'm not a selfish person, you know. I think that this conversation needs to be had and on many levels. So being that I'm going to share this on all of our platforms, maybe there are others who would like to have this conversation on their platform as well. I know that's definitely
sure,
my goal.
Sure, I feel comfortable. I'm giving you
sure.
my email address. It's a long one, but I'll give it to you. It's R. Tumlin, T-U-M, as in Mary, B as in boy, L-I-N, hyphen, Rucker, R-U-C-K-E-R, @.
I'll text it to her also. I'll email it to her.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's just email
it
to her. That would be better.
I'll send you Dr. Freeman's also. So, yeah, we'll try to get
okay.
I'll try to get with the
but
national
do you
guys
media have
person
websites?
For NSBE.
Do you have personal websites or no?
I have one for my company.
Do you just use the NSBE website? Is that what we want to do?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll put it on my Facebook page. And I'll have them put it on their, Twitter, Facebook, and what else is popular these days?
Oh, everything from LinkedIn
everything.
To Instagram.
Okay. LinkedIn,
to
put
WhatsApp,
on LinkedIn, yes.
You know, again, TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
I heard the thing called Twitch.
I don't do TikTok,
there's a lot of them.
I try to put it on everything else, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
I do have a website.
Okay.
And that would be www, but you generally don't need that.
Well, I think she already got yours. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Trans-ed.com, and that's www.
Do you mind spelling it?
Trans, TRANS-ED.com.
Okay.
I sent you Dr. Freeman's already, too. You should already have it in that last email.
Yeah, we were just kind of announcing it for the listening audience in case someone wanted to, continue this conversation. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get your information out. Before I let you go, the person who I need to give a shout-out to, I think he's on the line. I'm not certain. I don't know numbers by heart. Talk about a dependency on your iPhone. Let's see here.
Pyansky, is he out there?
I'm sorry?
Pyansky, is he out there?
Pyansky?
Pyansky, I said Pyansky. Yeah, Pyansky. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think 314-677. He calls from
a
different number on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
314-677?
I'm pretty sure that's it.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hello, Valerie. How are you?
You're live with Dr. Freeman. I'm good. Dr. Rucker, Ramona Rucker, and, of course, Ronald Moore. So don't want to hold them too much longer, but I did want to give you a chance to say hello. They're going to be on
the It's good. We can finish this conversation tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to elaborate more on the essence of the National Society of Black Engineers and what it has attempted to do since its founding back in the 1970s, I think it was in 1972,
mm-hmm.
and the progress it has quietly, I want to say that with emphasis, quietly been achieving. So it's always good to hear all of you, especially
mm-hmm.
you, Dr. Freeman, and of course you, Ronald. And we'd be ready to disseminate information. I might be able to get my grandson. You know, he's a recent engineering grad at the Louisiana State, a lifetime member
mm-hmm.
of NSBE. So I'm going to get him
mm-hmm.
online, too.
All right, wonderful. Look forward to it.
And before
thank
we
you.
Go, I'd really like to thank you for having us. and giving us this opportunity. We appreciate that, and it's part of that, what I just consider community responsibility, that we all have power, privilege, and platform, and the question is what we do with it when we have it. So we thank you.
The Judge Joe Brown Show, presented by Valerie Denise Jones. Uncensored truth with a legal twist. Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 929-477-1167. Or visit MissValerieDeniseJones.com for details.